I got so used to unsatisfied. Now I'm happy to sit around. My bills are paid and my checks don't rise. I can't even crack a smile since the blues slipped out of town.
Yes, there is.
I used to work my little finger down to the bone, and my baby wouldn't sleep by the time I got home. I couldn't go nowhere 'cause my engine was broke. The operator used to always turn off my phone. And now my bill collectors, they don't
Good morning. Welcome, everybody. We'll start the session here, if it's okay. And would the clerk call the roll, please?
Commissioner Shajian. Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Clark.
Here.
Commissioner Secord.
Present.
Commissioner Riley. Commissioner Neely.
Here.
Commissioner Riley.
Here.
Commissioner Wine.
Here.
Chairman Kruer.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Okay. With that, I'd like to go to the staff, Dr. Lester, so you could announce any changes to today's agenda and any procedures the commission is going to follow for today's hearing.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and commissioners. For those members of the public who are here today and would like to speak to the commission, you do need to fill out a speaker slip, which are located outside the room here at the table, and indicate which item number you wish to speak to and whether you're in support or in opposition of the staff recommendation. Also, please turn off your cell phones and other electronic devices that may interfere with the meeting or our webcasting process. In terms of changes on the agenda today, we have two changes to report, both on page 18. At item 13A, the A1 Mendocino 8-9 has been postponed. And item 14A, the North Coast Railroad Authority is recommending be moved to consent.
Okay.
So that would bring us to the North Central Coast District Deputy Director's report. And I have some minor items to report there, and there's also a minor item 3.5, an administrative permit. In terms of the minor items, we have a number of waivers to report today and also one immaterial extension, and I'm not aware of any objections to those waivers or the extension.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
As I mentioned, we also have one administrative permit for a demolition and reconstruction of a single-family home in Marin County in Inverness, and we have attached proposed conditions to that administrative permit to deal with the various issues raised by the redevelopment of the site, including special conditions to assure no impacts to sensitive species that may be in the area during construction. And with your concurrence, that administrative permit would become effective.
Any objection to finding concurrence with the hearing none? The commission has found concurrence.
I also wanted to bring you up to date on North Central Coast staffing issues. We have recently this week appointed Ms. Ruby Papp to take on the supervision responsibilities for the district, and we're looking forward to having her and me particularly looking forward to having her take on that responsibility. We are still struggling with overall staffing for North Central, including the loss of a number of analysts this past year. In recent months, we have made a couple of reassignments, including reassigning Madeline Cavalieri from our statewide planning unit to help with North Central Coast issues, and we're also anticipating reassigning staff from the enforcement unit to help out with issues in North Central. So with those reassignments and allocations of staff from other units and with Ruby's appointment, we're hopeful that we'll get back into a position of relative stability there and processing things. I see Mr. Douglas wants to comment.
We're also going to sign one of the North Coast staff members to work on items in Sonoma County. So that'll be on an as-needed basis.
There's a lot to do in Sonoma County.
Well, we've been having a great time with no staff, I'll tell you.
Commissioner Wan.
Just a comment. I understand what you have to do in terms of juggling people because we're so short-staffed, but losing, having an enforcement person work in another arena means, again, we have now even fewer enforcement people, and we don't have enough enforcement people to do the enforcement work as it is. So obviously you have to do what you have to do, but I'm just expressing my concerns about our enforcement program, and hopefully we'll find a way to make that whole, because I agree with what Commissioner Burke said yesterday. It's just nonsense for this state not to have any enforcement offices. I don't know how you have a meaningful program without them.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Director Douglas,
just
first.
In terms of response to that or augmentation of that, we are doing the best we can to juggle our resources to meet our needs. And one of the things that several commissioners have brought up over the last few years is, what are we doing to undertake succession planning? And one of the things that that we're interested in is having kind of cross-fertilization among staff so that they get experience at different parts of the agency's program. So I think there's a benefit here, too, to have an enforcement person trained in enforcement now learn some of the LCP and permit work that we do. So there is that benefit as well, but I'm very aware of your concerns. We are, and we're just doing the best we can to allocate resources as we have them.
Okay, Mr. Secord.
Just a minor question, but many times the meetings are in places that are cheaper than other places, and I don't know what those places are, but it strikes me that we need to be very attuned to trying to go to places for our meetings that are as inexpensive as possible. And I don't know if staff just, you know, institutionally knows those things, but I would have the sense that it's cheaper to run a meeting in San Luis Obispo than it is to do it in San Francisco.
No, as a matter of fact, it's not.
Okay.
If we did what you suggest, we'd be meeting in Eureka every month.
Every month.
Right.
Well, some of us would like that. It's certainly a wonderful trip, but we may not be able to be everywhere. And no. I just thought I'd ask the question if staff was interested
in
talking about that.
We're very aware of that, and one of the reasons we're meeting here is because the county is making these facilities available at no charge. So one of the things we're trying to do at every meeting, and Commissioner Riley's going to help us with the June meeting, is to make sure that we meet at places where we don't have to pay for the meeting place, which is a big part of our cost. And that's been, in fact, our good fortune for the last, I think, four or five meetings. So we're going to continue to do that. Access is an issue. The cost of flying into some of the places that we go, that's one of the reasons San Luis Obispo is expensive, because the cost of flying in there. And same with Santa Barbara for some people.
In fact, it's all over the board. Sometimes the rental cars are a lot more expensive in some of those areas that don't have the rental car pools, the airplane, the hotels, et cetera. But one thing we have to keep in mind, even with our cost, and we have to be frugal with our budget, obviously it's a very limited resource these days, but we also got to have access to the public and be able to distribute it around the state so people can be there to attend on items that they think and follow the Coastal Commission and et cetera. So that's equally as important as the budget, is to distribute it statewide.
Yes, and you may actually hear some concerns because our August meeting, we've now moved that to Oceanside because the City Council has made their facilities available at no charge. So there are a number of people from Northern California who are concerned that all of a sudden we're not going to be in the north.
I want to applaud again the idea of the streaming video. This has been a wonderful, wonderful thing, and I'm really glad that the commission has done this, and I'm glad the staff hasn't tried to cut this program, because I really think this is very important and does allow meetings anywhere to be accessible to the public.
Okay. So, one more. I see Commissioner Akajian down there laughing because we brought up his hometown, which
is so
generous.
Yeah, you got me all excited, Mr. Chair. July, we're also going to meet at the County Board of Supervisors Chamber. There is no cost to us. And anybody flying to the airport, I'll be happy to pick you up. You don't have to get a rental car.
Well, last time we had that beautiful tour where we saw the whales and everything. I hope you've let them go now since we went back there. You know,
we took the batteries off and.
Okay, with that we'll.
I had one more item on North Central, just to update you on Lawson's Landing. I understand on Wednesday you got a brief enforcement update on that. As you recall, we're working closely with the applicants and the County of Marin in that case to bring forward it. In the near term, permits for this commission's consideration in relationship to an enforcement order we also have pending. The latest reports from our meetings with the county is that the county certified the EIR. The Board of Supervisors did certify the EIR for that project. The county is now moving into what they call the merits review, which includes the coastal development permit review. And they anticipate having Planning Commission hearings over the next several months and have targeted early September as when a coastal permit may arrive at the Board of Supervisors. So if they stay on that schedule, we would anticipate seeing perhaps an item in front of this commission sometime in the fall. One of the outstanding issues in terms of process is the county is working on what they call a master plan coastal permit, and then they also anticipate doing more specific, precise development plan approvals for certain aspects of development that's being considered under that master plan. If the commission is able to wait for the county to finish that precise development plan permitting, then that would add a few more months to the county's process, but it may also facilitate this commission's review of that by having more on the table at a more specific level. So it's hard to say exactly, but perhaps we might be seeing something in front of us sometime around December or possibly a little later than that. Of course, the tension is the need to respond to some of the ongoing resource issues, and that's what we're doing under the enforcement order and some of the interim actions that Lisa Hagee reported on Wednesday.
Okay. Then we'll move on to Central. We'll move on to 5A.
So that brings us to the Central Coast District, item 5A, and I do have a PowerPoint presentation for that.
Okay.
Item 5A is a new appeal in the city of Santa Cruz, and it's the approval of single-family dwellings on Frederick Street. And overall, this is a substantial issue determination for the commission, and staff is recommending that the appeal raises no substantial issue. Slide 2, please. Now, this is an aerial photo of the project site, and this appeal is an appeal of the City of Santa Cruz approval of a 9-lot subdivision residential project on Frederick Street in the City of Santa Cruz. This slide shows you the project site outlined in yellow, which is currently developed with two church buildings and a paved parking lot. And immediately below it and adjacent is Frederick Street Park. To the right in this photo is the upper Santa Cruz Harbor and the surrounding urbanized neighborhood you can see on other sides of the project site and the park. This site is about 3,000 feet from the ocean, which is at the bottom, below the bottom of the screen here. Slide 3, please. This is a site plan of the approved project. It includes a subdivision of approximately 53,000 square foot parcel into 9 lots and construction of 9 detached single family dwellings and 3 one-bedroom accessory dwelling units that are located above 3 of the garages. One of the ADUs will be dedicated as a low to very low income unit. A second ADU will be dedicated as an affordable unit at the moderate income level. Access to all of the homes will be provided via a driveway extending along the northern site perimeter from Frederick Street, which is at the upper side of these proposed lots. An existing 12-foot-wide public easement is in place along the southern site boundary with the park, and this would be reduced to 7 feet in width, and a public path would be constructed in the easement. An existing public accessway from Harbor Drive to the park would be put into a public easement also and through access maintained. And you can see on this slide, roughly in the middle of the slide, the one easement, yeah, right there, is an existing easement that would be put into a formal easement to provide ongoing connection from neighborhoods to the north here into the park. In terms of the appellant's contentions, there were three valid appeals of the city's approval that were filed, and those are summarized on page 5 of the staff report. Overall, the appellants contend that the city-approved project is inconsistent with the city's LCP, primarily with respect to public access, park impacts, neighborhood compatibility, coastal views, and geological hazards and drainage. Overall, as I mentioned, although the appellants have raised valid issues, staff is recommending that the commission find the approved project raises no substantial issue regarding consistency with the city's LCP and the public access and recreation policies of the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. This is a photo of the project site, including a photo of the easement area that's one of the primary issues in the contentions on the appeal. A major contention of the appellants is that reduction in the width of this existing 12-foot-wide easement to 7 feet will impact pedestrian and bicycle public access from Frederick Street Park to the Santa Cruz Harbor, as well as other public access points. The easement area, as you can see in this slide, is that 12 feet immediately behind that gate and extending back towards the trees. So that's where the easement exists. The original purpose of this easement was to provide ingress and egress through the church property to an adjoining landlocked parcel that did not have adequate access. This privately created easement ascended to city ownership in June of 1975, and a skateboarding area is now located on what was once the landlocked parcel. You can't see it here, but it's at the back of the easement there towards the trees. This easement has allowed for city park maintenance vehicles to access Frederick Street Park without going through the park itself. The easement is located over an existing driveway, and you can see the gate in front of that driveway and the parking lot area on the site, and it terminates in the unpaved area near the bluff edge adjacent to the harbor. Over time, members of the public have used this easement as a way through the church property to the park. Once in the park, the public can descend stairs into the adjacent harbor, which provides a connection to the Arana Gulch open space area, roughly 1,000 feet to the north. As you can see, the existing easement is located over a paved and gated driveway that provides access to the church. And although neighboring residents have been using this easement area as a shortcut into the park, the easement area is not currently developed for general public access. And at least in this photo here, and as it appears in general, is not perceived to be generally available for public use. That is, this easement area appears to be part of the private church property. Although 5 feet of the width of the existing easement area will be used for private development as part of the project, the remaining 7-foot-wide portion of this easement will be clearly developed for use as a public path into the park. In addition, a new vehicular easement for park maintenance will be provided through the site, and the existing Harbor Drive public path to the park will remain. Also, as shown in the next slide, this is immediately to the south of the slide you just saw. This is about 25 feet to the south. This is the existing paved path that currently leads into the park from Frederick Street. So in staff's view, together these public paths, this existing one and the newly developed one in the 7 feet would provide for adequate access into the park. Although there is a valid argument to be made that all of the easement should be kept and used to provide access to and through the park as a matter of public policy, a new pathway that would be constructed in the easement area in tandem with the existing park pathway located 25 feet to the south, provide access for a variety of users to and through the park. In addition, the new pathway would provide what is essentially a new accessway into the park, inasmuch as the existing easement is unsigned and gated and does not appear to be available as a public access. In that sense, arguably access to the park is enhanced in some ways by this project. For these reasons, the appeals in staff's judgment do not raise a substantial issue regarding public access. Slide six. Another major contention is the impact of the project on coastal views, and the contention is that the project will impact a public view from Frederick Street Park inland toward the Santa Cruz Mountains, and this is one representation of that inland view from the park. Some of this view is already blocked by existing trees, as you can see, that will be retained by the project. However, development of lots numbers 8 and 9 on the site plan of the project will block much of this view from a portion of the project. The city did require some modifications to the residents on lot 9 in order to retain some of this view. This view, though, is not designated as a significant view in the city's LCP, and although this view has some localized neighborhood importance, it does not constitute a major or significant scenic view within the city of Santa Cruz, and in staff's view, or within the state of California as a whole. Thus, this contention also does not raise a substantial issue with respect to the project's conformance with the view protection policies of the certified LCP. The appellants also contend that the project is incompatible with the character of the surrounding area and that the project will have a detrimental impact on Frederick Street Park. The neighborhood surrounding the project site is characterized by a mix of single-family and multifamily residential development with a mix of 1 to 3-story building heights and a variety of unit sizes, densities, and architectural styles. The next slides show you some of this character. This is existing development across the street from the project site. Next slide. This is a view across the park towards existing multifamily residential on the southeast side of the park. Next slide. And this is a view of existing multifamily residences located, again, across from the park. The proposed development includes 9 single-family residences, 3 of which will have an accessory dwelling unit located over the garage. Building heights will range from 26 to 28 feet, consistent with the heights of nearby residential development and allowable under the certified planned unit development regulations. Next slide, please. This is a representation of what the development would look like from facing onto Frederick Street. Those are the 3 units that would be smaller units that would be built along Frederick Street, and the park is to the right and behind that. Next slide. This is a representation of the development from within the park. I would note that this doesn't quite illustrate what was finally approved by the city, where you see the landscaping strip there in front of the development. That's actually now where the 7-foot wide public access path would be developed immediately adjacent to the park, right? So that's a representation of what the development would look like from the park. The design of the homes will incorporate craftsman-style elements similar to existing residences in the neighborhood. The density of the development is consistent with the site's low-density land use designation, and the city-approved project represents appropriately designed residential infill development with an established single-family and multifamily residential neighborhood. The approved development is less dense than other existing residential development located south and west of Frederick Street, and the houses will be located approximately 15 feet from the park's northern boundary. Again, the public access easement and landscaping will provide some buffer between the park and the residential uses on the site. The western edge of the park will remain open to Frederick Street, and the eastern edge of the park will remain open to the slope that descends down to Santa Cruz Harbor. Thus, again, in staff view, the appellant's contentions do not raise a substantial issue with respect to conformance with the LCP regarding neighborhood compatibility. Next slide, please. The appellants also contend that the approved project may lead to failure on the slope of the eastern side of the project and that the project will increase runoff, will also increase pollution due to residential parking on the site. The site is relatively flat except for the eastern edge of the site that contains a steep slope of approximately 30% down to the Santa Cruz Harbor. No development or landscaping is proposed for this slope, and all residential structures are set back a minimum of 20 feet from the edge of the slope in conformance with the LCP, which generally requires a minimum 20-foot setback. The deck on Lot 9 and some parking are located approximately 10 feet from the top edge of the slope as allowed by the LCP. The city-approved development also includes installation of a 5-foot deep, 3-foot wide, and 100-foot long rock-filled trench to be located 10 feet from the top edge of the slope. The purpose of this trench is to allow stormwater runoff from the eastern portion of the site to percolate and dissipate into the subsurface area of the slope. The project's geotechnical investigation did not find any evidence of slope instability. This was supported by the fact that the slope is heavily vegetated with trees and thick shrubs. In addition, the commission staff geologist reviewed the geotechnical investigation report and determined that allowing percolation of stormwater through the trench near the top of the slope is a reasonable way to handle runoff in this area, and that it's unlikely that this subsurface water would perch on an impermeable slope or cause erosion problems. The staff geologist also stated that the location of the trench will prevent stormwater from running down the surface of the slope, which is much more problematic, of course, in terms of erosion. The geotechnical investigation also found that the proposed redevelopment of the project was feasible, provided the recommendations in the report are closely followed during the design and construction of the project. These include a minimum residential structure setback of 20 feet, and I believe the city required that these recommendations be followed. Finally, the city conditioned the project to include an engineered drainage plan that requires post-construct project runoff does not exceed pre-project levels, that all downspouts be directed away from the slope, and bioswales or BMPs be used for handling water, submission of an erosion control plan prior to grading, and implementation of the project's geotechnical report. To address polluted runoff, the city also conditioned the project to require installation of oil and grease traps and implementation of BMPs during construction to minimize runoff. For these reasons, the appellant's contentions do not raise a substantial issue with respect to conformance with the hazards and drainage policies of the certified LCP. Finally, there was an appellant contention concerning wetland setbacks and issues. In this case, the wetlands are at the bottom of the slope adjacent to the harbor, and staff has evaluated this and determined that there were adequate setbacks and no significant impacts to those wetlands from this project, and therefore no substantial issue raised by those contentions as well. Overall, although there are some valid issues raised by the appeal, it is a judgment call, particularly with respect to the public access concerns raised here, and staff is recommending that there's no substantial issue overall with respect to conformance with the City of Santa Cruz certified LCP. That concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lester. With that, I'll go to the commission for ex parte, starting on my right, Mr. Blank.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have one ex parte on file, and this morning Mr. Guerrieri, Matt Guerrieri, came up to me at the dais and asked me to support the request for substantial issue.
Mr. Secord?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the 4th of April, I had a telephone call from Susan McCabe over this project, which she led me through the staff report, talked about the infill project and the affordable components of it, the appeal and the consistency with the LCP and the applicant's wish to agree with staff with respect to the no substantial issue.
Thank you. Commissioner Wan?
On April 7th, I had a phone call from a Patricia Maticek who said that the views will be impacted by this project, that the only views that will be left of the harbor will be from one small area in the park, that this project results in a loss of access. This is immediately used next to a heavily used city park, and it's used to get to a major access to the west side of the harbor. Believes that this is designed for the city park to be used as a front yard for the development. The current access would be reduced from 7 feet to 12 feet. This accessway is multi-use, including bicycles, and a reduction could loss result in public safety issues. The geology hydrology report done by an expert has not been analyzed by the staff, and it should have been, and that it violates the zoning, should be R15, so it's denser than the zone. On April 6th, I received a phone call from a Matt Guerri, I'm not sure how you pronounce the last name, explained that the project is located at Santa Cruz Harbor. Former church property next to the park is a very special this is a very special location. It's the meeting of the Santa Cruz Harbor, the terminal of the Arana Gulch watershed, and a coastal bluff overlooking the harbor. He gave me the history of the voting on this project. He said this project drains into the North Santa Cruz Harbor, that there is a historical easement, but in addition there is a lot of proof of prescriptive rights over that easement. This project changes the community character and impacts the views. That the staff had apparently not read the geologist's report that they had submitted, so she couldn't factor that into the analysis. That the development includes coastal bluff because the property goes down the bluff. And they are concerned about the reduction of the deeded easement from 12 feet to 7 feet, and that there are prescriptive rights there, this creates a narrowing of the pathway, and that we should find substantial issue to take a more in-depth look at this, particularly the issue of the trail and geology, and that there are a lot of issues, so that the cumulative impact of all of them combined does raise this to the level of substantial issue.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. I had a ex parte on April 7th, a meeting in La Jolla with Susan McCabe, at which time she said the applicants were in agreement with the staff recommendation of no substantial issue on the appeal by the different neighborhood groups. She said the appellants has raised issues related primarily to public access, prescriptive rights, coastal views, and geology and drainage. And she believes, and staff believes, the project is consistent with the LCP. In addition, the commission staff geologist reviewed the general geology report and concluded that the site is geologically safe. That was on the 7th. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On April 4th, I had the same conversation with Susan McCabe that Commissioner Secor did.
Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Tuesday, April 8th, in the evening, I had a brief conversation with Susan McCabe on this, identical to the chair's.
Mr. Chairman, shortly before the meeting started this morning, I had a short discussion with Matt Guerri from the Seabright Neighbors, and he was asking that we give serious consideration to finding substantial issue here and moving to de novo hearing on the issues they've raised. My other ex partes are on file.
Thank you, Commissioner Riley. Commissioner Wasel?
Yes, one of my staff member, Alonso Gonzalez, met with Susan McCabe on April 1st, and she communicated that she was in complete agreement with the staff recommendation to find that no substantial issue exists. That the development will be in the character of the community, views will not be significantly affected, and the drainage situation will be improved. I also met briefly this morning with Matt Guerrieri, and he asked that we find substantial issue and bring this issue to a hearing so they can have their opportunity to express why it's not in conformance.
Commissioner Akajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Wednesday the 10th, I had a short meeting with Ms. McCabe, and the context of our meeting was the same as yours.
Thank you for that. And I see that your friends are departing you down there at that table.
Well, they probably spent a little late last night and couldn't make it this morning.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'll open the public hearing. And it's normally the practice of the commission to allow, when staff recommends no substantial issue, 3 minutes per side, 3 minutes for the applicants and 3 minutes for the appellants and 3 minutes for the applicant. But the appellants, because there's two different groups here today, have approached me and approached staff. They are asking for more time, so we are going to allow 3 minutes per side. Some of the speaker slips are not, there's
five, there's seven speaker slips. It looks like there's five that are appellants. It doesn't describe that on the speaker slip. Some of them are checked out. So I'm going to ask the two different groups that we're going to each have. We start out with the appellants first, and then we go to the applicant. And the applicant will be given, instead of 3 minutes, can have up to six to be equal and fair with the appellants if the applicant so chooses. So with that, who wants to start first? The Frederick Street... I'm sorry. Do you have a question?
Do you want me to go since I'm doing the broader issues, and then I'll skip over the easement stuff, and you can do that?
I don't care. It's up to you. What do you want to do?
Okay. We'll keep going.
Any more interruptions, sir? Frederick Street, are you, sir, what's your name?
Good morning. I'm Matt Guerreri. I represent the Seabright Neighbors Association.
Okay. Hold on just a second. Okay, yes, sir. And then who's going to be speaking with your group for 3 minutes?
Just me.
You? Just you. Okay. And then the other group is here for the other, all
That's
the additional
correct.
Speakers for the for their 3 minutes
just
of appellants.
Two people?
Just one for 3 minutes.
Thank you. Okay. Sir, the 3 minutes, go ahead, sir.
Okay. Chairman Kruger, commissioners. I'm here with seven members of the Seabright Neighbors Association to oppose this project as it's currently configured and to request that the commissioners take a closer look at this project and find for a substantial issue and move to a de novo hearing. Next slide. Next. There are a number of issues that we've raised in our appeal, location and public access, coastal views, geology and drainage, which I'll spend a bit of time on, community character, and the plan development process, the LCP plan development process. Next, location. As you've seen from the staff report, this location is at the juncture of three coastal assets, the Santa Cruz Harbor, an area that's obscured by the box, which is Arana Gulch, which is a natural protected area, and a coastal asset that was actually created by the Coastal Commission in 1973, the newly formed Coastal Commission, which is Frederick Street Park, which is now a landmark park and is in itself the de facto park for the harbor and is a coastal asset. So this location is very special. It's at the juncture of three existing coastal assets. Next slide. The LCP and city code say that views from one public area to another public area, in this case the landmark park Frederick Street to Arana Gulch, which is a protected area, a natural protected area, will be in fact obscured. The next slide will be obscured by the project. So while this is not a whitewater view and it does not show the ocean per se, it is the connection visually and otherwise between two public access areas that are both coastal assets. Next slide. As I say, this is an established landmark. Next slide. Arana Gulch, which has a separate master plan, speaks to the sweeping vistas that this area provides. And so we're talking about views to and from Frederick Street Park and Arana Gulch. And that natural connection will be broken by this project. Next slide. This is actually a painting by a local artist, Erica Perloff, taken directly from a photograph. The staff points out that this is an inland view to Loma Prieta and the Santa Cruz Mountains, and they describe it as a peekaboo inland view. We differ respectfully and call it a masterpiece. Next slide. I will not refer to the easement issues. The irregulars will talk to that. So next slide, next slide, next slide, next slide, next slide. Geology and drainage are a major concern for us. We're not saying that mitigations cannot be put in that would take care of the runoff, but what we're saying is that As currently configured, it
Sir,
won't work.
Your time is up.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And the other appellant that is going to speak for the additional 3 minutes, the other group? You're going to take the whole 3 minutes?
Yes,
okay.
I am.
Okay. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Good morning. I'm Carol DePalma, Frederick Street Irregular. I'm a former city council member in Santa Cruz in the 70s when this park was created, and I'm also a former member of the Central Coast Commission in 1976 and 77. The park on Frederick Street came into being because of the 1973 Coastal Commission decision that stopped a condo project that would have restricted public access to the harbor, coast, and state beaches. When the city bought the land for the park, they also acquired a 12-foot deeded easement. The easement had been used for more than 50 years when the city acquired it with the parkland. The park was designed using the deeded easement as its only paved entrance, as shown in this 1976 photo. There's the paved entrance, the curved path that entered into the curved path. It remained the only formal paved entrance for 19 years. This is how people got to the state beaches and the harbor and the park. And there was a bike path that was put in the late 70s with much pushing and prodding from Ed Brown, who was the Central Coast director at the time. We disagree with the staff report that says it is not a public pathway to the park. We have submitted documents. We mailed you documents in here and pictures to all the commissioners that show. We also have documents that show in 1967 the prescriptive easement was used since at least the 1940s, and then it became a deeded easement. We strongly oppose the taking of 2,400 square feet from a publicly owned easement for private benefit. That's the 5 feet off the 12 feet. This is not a public benefit as required by PD zoning. The park works safely using both the multi-purpose perimeter easement that goes to the harbor and the state beaches and points east and west, and the newer 1995 path that was created for the disabled. We agree with the staff quote that says a wider area is better than a narrow area, unquote. We also agree with staff that says, quote, it is undisputed that there exists a public right of access across the 12-foot area in question. Of this, there is little doubt. In conclusion, we hope the Coastal Commission can help us once again, maximize the public access to our coast by retaining our full 12-foot deeded easement.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for coming.
Good evening.
Now for the applicant, there's two speaker slips, Christy Brandt and Blanker. How are you going to, you can have up to 6 minutes, so are you going to take the 6 minutes, or is this...
We don't intend to, but I'd like to have it combined, and I'll begin, and Christy will follow up.
And your name, please?
Anne Blemker.
Okay.
Okay, good morning, Chairman Kruger, Commissioners. I'm Anne Blemker, representing the applicant. I'll provide a brief presentation. Obviously, we are in agreement with the staff recommendation of no substantial issue, and we'd like to thank staff for their time and effort on this and a great presentation this morning. The location's already been described. It's about 3/5 of a mile from the Santa Cruz Harbor to the east and north of the city's Frederick Street Park. The project is an infill development within a residential neighborhood. The property is separated from the Santa Cruz Harbor by a parking lot, road, and approximately 40-foot grade separation. Here's a view of the subject site from Frederick Street Park looking north. The residences are proposed in the background where the existing church building is, beyond the restroom building shown on the right. As described by the staff, the project consists of a 9-lot subdivision and construction of 9 single-family residences with 3 accessory dwelling units on the site designated low-density residential in the LCP. The project also involves the construction of a public access path through the site to connect with the park. Here's a rendering of the proposed residences looking north from the park site. And the new 7-foot-wide public path would be constructed between the residences and the park with connections to the neighborhood to the north and the park to the south. The primary concerns raised by the appellants relate to public access and views, which I'll go over briefly. Here's a view of the proposed public path entrance at Frederick Street looking east. The new 7-foot-wide path would begin here and continue eastward. As you can see, the easement is currently located over the church's paved, locked, gated driveway, and it's not signed for public access. It's not currently a public multi-use path, as the appellants are contending. It was always a driveway serving a landlocked parcel on the eastern boundary of the site. It was a residential parcel that needed this for vehicular access. It was not intended as a multi-use path. Vehicular access for city maintenance vehicles will be provided in a different configuration on the site with the new design, and pedestrian access will also be provided on the site through the new 7-foot-wide path shown on the right. Here's another view of the easement where the new path will be located and the existing path that's located immediately south. Again, public access is adequately provided on site. The project will supplement the public access opportunities that already exist within the park. Public views. The appellants contend that the project will impact a public view from Frederick Street Park toward the harbor, the Aronic Gulch, open space area, and the nearby Santa Cruz Mountains. It's a similar view showed by staff, but it's inland from the park looking northeast. That's currently obscured with trees. The buildings that are proposed are going to be inland of the grassy area here. And the view in question, again, it's a partially obstructed view from a local park and does not constitute a significant statewide view, as acknowledged by your staff. The appellants also contend that a proper geological report was not prepared and that the approved project may lead to failure of the slope on the eastern side of the project site. However, the geotechnical investigation did not find any evidence of slope instability in this area, and the project site and no development or landscaping is proposed along the slope. All residences are set back the minimum 25 feet from the edge of the top of the slope in accordance with the LCP. As shown in this quote, your staff geologist has concluded that the project is geologically safe. Some additional benefits. In addition to responding to the appellant's concerns, I'll briefly point out some additional benefits of the project, including water quality improvements and protections. The applicants are proposing a sustainable design with multiple green building measures. I won't go over all of them, but it's really cutting-edge technology to make sure this is a sustainable development. And also, the applicants have conducted extensive public outreach to the community, and the owners went door to door, created a website to inform and involve the public, and solicited input. And they do have many supporters of the project, and they were very responsive to their neighbors. To wrap it up here, the project will provide new public access. Will not obstruct any public views, is geologically safe. The project, they're implementing BMPs and green building measures. They've been responsive to neighborhood concerns, and the project is consistent with the certified LCP. That concludes my portion. Christy Brandt, one of the applicants, would like to address you as well, just to introduce herself.
Yeah.
Got a little over a half a minute?
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Christy Brandt. Excuse me, I'm one of the applicants. I'm in support of the staff project. And I just want to say I'm disappointed that we couldn't resolve all the neighborhood concerns. We honestly tried to do the best that we could. I plan to live, and my partner also plans to live in another home with our families. We've used this park since my children were young 8 years ago. We've also, since owning it, become aware of criminal activity in the park. I've had to repaint the buildings a number of times because of graffiti. I've had neighbors privately complain about the noise in the park, be woken up in the middle of the night. I believe it's going to increase the safety of the park. I don't believe it will detract. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today. Okay, with that, I'll close the public hearing, go back to Dr. Lester's staff for a staff response.
Thank you. As I went over in the presentation, we are recommending no substantial issue. However, you know, this is one of those projects where there's probably a number of different ways you could meet the various objectives, the project objectives, the requirements of the LCP. There were some judgments to make, and particularly with respect to the public access and visual contentions, and in staff's recommendation, those issues do not raise a substantial issue, but I'm available for questions on those concerns.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. With that, I'll go to Commissioner Wan and Commissioner Blank.
Oh, the Potter said you wanted.
I have some concerns about several of the issues, including the views, but the biggest concern I have deals with public access. To begin with, I'm somewhat disturbed by the way in which the description of the public rights issues has been dealt with in the staff report. Yes, this is private property, but that's specifically what prescriptive rights are about, the use of private property. If it was public property, it wouldn't be. There wouldn't be prescriptive rights. And the gate actually increases the likelihood that the prescriptive rights exist, particularly if there's no signage there. If there was signage there allowing the public to use it, again, there would be no prescriptive rights. I know this sounds contrary to what you think of, but that's what prescriptive rights are. And this is generally not how we handle the question of prescriptive rights. If there's substantial evidence that prescriptive rights exist, the commission is not allowed to extinguish those rights, and you don't wait for a court decision, which is the final actual arbiter, but you don't wait for that decision to protect them until you deal with it at least until a full prescriptive rights study has been done. If nothing else, aside from everything else, the language in the staff report is really unfortunate. And frankly, in my opinion, having that kind of a discussion about prescriptive rights is going to undermine our ability to deal with that issue in the future because people cite what's in commission staff reports. So I am concerned, if nothing else, about the way it was written up. But on the substantive part of it, okay, we're allowing the reduction from 12 feet to 7 feet and somehow saying that this is a public benefit. How? There's already a 12-foot easement that exists that's being reduced. This is a multi-purpose path. The reduction to 7 feet, and that means that there are bicyclists, for example, who use this. The reduction to 7 feet could create a public safety hazard when you're dealing with both pedestrians and bicyclists. Staff deals with this by saying that if it's necessary in the future a wider path is really needed, that park property could be used. I mean, staff specifically says that. Well, that, I think, is what the people who are objecting to this is saying. Yes, this is going to need to go back to 12 feet, and when it does go back to 12 feet, that 5 feet will be taken out of the park. And so it's actually a deeding of public park property to the applicant to use that 5-foot strip, and I think that we certainly need to take a closer look at that issue, and that's why I have real concerns about this. The rest of it, may be fine, and it is a judgment call about views and all of this, but to, in essence, say in the staff report that we'll narrow it and then we'll widen it again by taking park property, that's granting of park property, 5 feet of it along the whole length to the applicant, and I don't think that that's appropriate, and it's certainly something we ought to be looking at in greater depth.
Thank you, Commissioner Wine. Commissioner Blank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at this project, I think it looks like a great project. I wish it was in lots of other places in California, but it does raise an issue for me, at least one that I'd like to, kind of like an itch I'd like to have scratched. And I have a question for staff, for Dr. Lester. How many people are in our office in this district?
You mean how many people we have working on district regulation and planning?
Yeah, or staff reports.
Let's see. We have approximately 6 people.
Okay, so we're not down to 1, like I thought I heard in this district.
Not like North Central District.
Okay,
no.
All right. I just want to make sure.
That includes myself and the manager in that
okay.
6.
Yeah. I'm really tempted both for staff load and the rest, and the fact that I kind of like this project, but let me just ask the chair and the if we found substantial issue, I don't want this going into a 12-month buffer here, because I think that's unfair to the applicants. Do we have time to just make sure we did my issue is I'm not sure we looked at the appellant's issues in enough detail, and I was just getting to the point of whether we were kind of staff constrained, and if I asked you to do that, whether you'd say yes and I'll get to it in 09. I don't think that's what I want to put the applicant through. But can you help me through?
Yeah, I think Dr. Lester can answer that question. Yeah. How long before, if you did find substantial issue, how long it would be before you could realistically come back for a de novo hearing?
Well, I can't make any promises, and I'd have to look at the other pending appeals. So we do try to put things in a queue, relatively speaking, so that we get to other appellants or appeals that have been pending already first. But I also couldn't see this one taking up to, the average of 8-9 months now that's currently taking. So it would probably be sometime in the next several months. I wouldn't say next month for sure.
So I guess I'd like to take a look again at the hazards and drainage issues that the appellants, and I think I'll support Commissioner Wan's request for a substantial issue, only on the caveat that my request is not to put this in the standard queue, but given that the issue I want to look at is very short, very concise, probably takes, I'm thinking, an hour of staff time, not a week of staff time. That would be my request, and I know we can't.
I do think, the issues raised here are not as complicated as some other appeals, to be sure.
Okay, Commissioner Secor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the commission determine that appeal number A-3-STC-08-003 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 30603 of the Coastal Act, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Secord and seconded by Vice Chair Neely. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the finding of no substantial issue and adoption of the resolutions and findings that are contained in the staff report. Commissioner Secord, would you speak to your motion?
No, I think we both heard both sides.
Vice Chair Neely?
Oh, just Mr. Chairman, wanted to point out that I think the staff did address all the issues, and that the commission geologist evaluated the geotechnical information and the city-approved project site plan and concluded that the project's been sited and designed in such a way as to be geologically safe as required by the LCP. And I think we should move ahead with it today.
Commissioner Potter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I frankly suffer from the same conflict, I think, that Commissioner Blank is experiencing. I'm prone to support the project. I just, for my own due diligence, I'd be interested in taking a personal look at it. I'm not going to fall on my sword on this item, but I just feel it bears a second look. I think it's the same issue that Commissioner Juan is talking about. I'm not as concerned about the public access issue because I think prescriptive rights is usually a court determination. But there are some view issues and some runoff issues that might merit a second look. But like I said, I'm not going to die my sword over this.
We wouldn't expect you to, Commissioner Potter.
I feel a lot better.
Do you? Thank you. Anyone else want to comment on this? Okay. We have a motion. Again, the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote, and if you vote that way, we'll find no substantial issue. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Commissioner Ashajian?
Aye.
Commissioner Blank?
No.
Commissioner Clark?
Yes.
Commissioner Wesa?
Yes.
Commissioner Secord?
Yes.
Commissioner Neely?
Yes.
Commissioner Potter?
No.
Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Commissioner Juan?
No.
Chairman Kruer?
No.
7-3.
Okay. 7-4. Six-four. The commission hereby finds that appeal number A-3-STC-08-003 does not present a substantial issue. Okay. Six A.
Thank you. Item 6A is a new permit application. There's also a PowerPoint presentation for this item. This item is a coastal development permit application to demolish a single-family residence and accessory structures, as well as construct a new residence with an attached garage and other accessory development within the city of Pacific Grove in the Asilomar Dune system. The applicants are requesting to demolish the approximate 1,949 square foot single family residence and construct an approximate 4,400 square foot new residence on this roughly 1 acre lot in Asilomar. Because the City of Pacific Grove does not have a certified LCP, the standard of review is Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act. However, we do have a certified LUP that has provided guidance to this commission over the years concerning development in Asilomar. As many of you know, the Asilomar Dunes area has a number of unique biological and geological resources, including at least 10 plant and one animal species of special concern, and dune landforms comprised almost entirely of quartz sand. Historically, the Commission has considered these coastal dunes to be environmentally sensitive habitat because they include these special plant and animal life habitats, as well as the unique dune ecosystem. Other than the existing development, the applicant's one-acre parcel is completely comprised of dune habitat, albeit degraded, and it does include two plant species of special concern, Tidstrom's lupin and Monterey spineflower. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, the Commission has a long history of protecting the Asilomar Dune system as ESHA, including through development and application of the guiding Pacific Grove LUP policies that attempt to strike a balance between maximum dune habitat protection and allowance of reasonable residential use. Specifically, one of the key policies has been the allowance of up to 15% of structural coverage on the dune ESHA lots for any new residential development, and an additional 5% of immediate outdoor living area. This slide just gives you a sense of the, it's a little hard to see, but the applicant's house is in on the far right side of the slide, and you can see various houses that have existing and redeveloped over time, and in particular you might note where you see the dunes looking in better condition. That's a result of this commission's requirements to have restoration on site whenever there's new development in the dune system. Next slide, please. This is a site plan of the proposed development. You can see that it's a one-story house with approximately 4,400 square feet within the development. It's been sited in the same general disturbance footprint of the existing development that will be demolished. So if you go to the next slide, this slide shows you the existing development footprint, site coverage in red, and the new footprint with the dotted line. As I said, it's generally in the same disturbance footprint that will be demolished, albeit with an increase in aggregate lot coverage and outdoor living area from approximately 10.9% to 21.2% of the lot, or an additional 4,500 square feet. The footprint will not extend as far into the dunes, but it will be wider than the existing footprint. The proposed residence avoids direct impacts to endangered plant species that have been identified on the site, and pursuant to the city's CEQA review, the applicant has incorporated into the project a dune landscape restoration plan for the remainder of the site, as well as various other measures to address the impacts of the project. The Commission has generally applied the guiding LUP 15 and 5% coverage rule for these Asilomar Dunes cases where new development is proposed on vacant lots. Now, this is to address the Coastal Act requirements to protect ESHA from non-resource dependent development while avoiding a takings of private property. However, the Commission has also approved an increase in lot coverage over existing coverage in some cases, depending on the unique circumstances of each case. In this case, there is already a non-resource dependent use in the dunes, the existing pre-Coastal Act house. In addition, redevelopment of the new house will occur in the same general development footprint as this existing house, thereby limiting impacts to surrounding ESHA. Further, demolition and redevelopment of the site will necessarily involve temporary impacts to areas immediately surrounding the existing envelope. So, coupled with the proposed restoration of the remainder of the site and conditions to stay within the coverage limits of the LUP and provide off-site restoration, the project will not result in a significant disruption of the Asilomar Dunes ESHA. Overall, approval of the project with conditions to maximize ESHA protection, including mitigation of cumulative impacts of such developments in Asilomar, will allow reasonable redevelopment of the existing residential use consistent with the Coastal Act and with the guidance of the LUP, and would also provide for some consistency with other projects approved by this commission. Next slide, please. The other major issue that the report addresses is visual. This is the views of the representations of the proposed house, and you can see there is although it's a single-story house, there is an element to the design that gives it the appearance of two stories towards the center of the project. Next slide. Staff is particularly concerned with this view inland from Sunset. And this is the existing house on the site. And if you go to that's the proposed. If you just go back one second to see the change, you can in this existing view you can see the tree lines in, framing the existing view in the back from this vantage point. Then the new proposal representation. Staff is recommending that second-story element be reduced or several feet down to about 18 feet total height in order to address this view impact from Sunset. So the next slide shows you a view from the backside comparing existing and proposed, not as critical a view as the Sunset view, but we do believe that the site, the proposed design is too large and presents a visual impact that should be addressed through a special condition. There are other special conditions in the project to deal with water quality and archaeological resources, but overall, with the conditions to protect ESHA and address the visual impact, staff is recommending that the project be approved consistent with the Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act. And that concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lester. With that, I'll go to any ex parte, starting on my right with Commissioner Blank. No? Okay. No ex parties. We have no speaker slips on this particular item. So with that, I'll go to... Oh. We don't have it. Okay. We will open the public hearing. Sir, would you please come up, and would you fill out a speaker slip after you're through?
Yes, I will. Thank
okay.
you very much.
We didn't have a speaker slip on... So
I apologize. I'm not at this meeting very often. So
okay.
In the future, I'll fill out one before I get to the meeting. But shall I start?
Yeah, do you have, how much time are you requesting, sir?
I only need a few minutes.
3 minutes, sir, is fine.
I think that's fine.
And state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Eric Miller. I'm the architect representing the applicant here. We've been working on this project for about 5 years now, and you know, we think it's been a long process, but a good one and a necessary one. In fact, we think staff's done a really wonderful job, and we concur with everything in their staff report except special condition 2E, which does ask to limit the maximum height to 18 feet. But if you review your packet, you'll find that the LUP policy 2.5.4B, which does limit height to 18 feet, only applies to parcels fronting Sunset Avenue. And this parcel does not front Sunset. In fact, it's a PICO property, and there's an entire empty lot between our property and Sunset Avenue. So it never touches Sunset. In fact, what does apply to our property is the PG zoning code 23.20.030, which lets us have a maximum plate height of 24 feet. And our property has a maximum plate height of 19 feet, which is 5 feet lower than allowed. To me, you know, the overlay that we supplied the City of Pacific Grove and eventually Coastal Commission that staff showed earlier is not a very good representation of the appearance of that, because it's simply a cutout of our drawing pasted onto a photograph. If that was photographically rendered, and this was 5 years ago, so we didn't have that capability, but we do now, if that was a computer animated photograph rendering, it would blend in much better, because the house is going to be natural stone that's consistent with the natural colors down in the dunes area, and the roof would be a slate, natural slate roof. So I think you can see by the model here that it really does tuck down into the dune. It really is sensitive to the view shed from Sunset. And, you know, because we do comply with all the zoning code, LUP policies, it is consistent with, you know, the architecture and blends into the dunes, I think it would be a real shame to make it into something that was really unattractive, because as far as I'm concerned, that all is part of what makes that area beautiful. I live in the area, and having some architectural feature on a building instead of taking everything off of it would not be good for the dunes area. So hopefully we can have this approved, and the five-year process can end today, and we can move on with it. So do you have any questions?
Not at this time, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Okay. With that, I'll close the public hearing. I'll go back to staff. Dr. Lester, maybe you could address that point.
On the view issue, staff is making its best professional assessment of what the potential impact would be to visual resources in Asilomar. As I mentioned at the outset, the Coastal Act is the standard of review here. There is no certified LUP. The zoning ordinances referenced are not part of the certified LCP or a basis for a commission decision here. The LUP does have a policy concerning potential impacts along Sunset, and it does include an 18-foot height, although that policy is not specifically applicable to this site. We felt it was guidance as to what the commission had determined was an appropriate height for homes that presented a potential visual impact in Asilomar. It's not because we think the policy is specifically applicable here. The standard is the Coastal Act. In particular, a new development should be subordinate to visual and scenic issues here. And so in our assessment and based on the applicant's materials, we've concluded that the height should be reduced a bit, in particular that quasi-second story element in the center of the house. So that's the basis of the recommendation.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Lester. With that, Commissioner Potter?
Mr. Chair, I move the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 3-07-012 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote. If we get a second to that motion, I'd offer an amending motion to speak to that.
It's been moved by Commissioner Potter and seconded by Commissioner Secord. Both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the approval of the Coastal Development Permit as condition and adoption of the resolutions and findings. Mr. Potter?
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we delete special condition number 2E in regards to building heights, and I'd speak to that briefly if I get a second.
Second.
Okay, it's, the amending motion is to delete condition 2E, and it's the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote on the amending motion. Commissioner Potter, would you speak to your amending motion?
Certainly. I do think there's an issue in regards to how well this does blend with the surrounding landscape, and I think the applicant's actually correct that simply, you know, pasting a cutout of the photo over the site isn't exactly an accurate representation of how it would fit with the site. And I do think that since there are no variances required, it is certainly below the allowable height. That I think by contemporary modeling standards, it would look a little better than it does as per the staff presentation. So for that reason, I don't think it's visually intrusive, and I do think that it blends well with the surrounding landscape. So for that reason, I offer that amendment.
The maker, the second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The applicant's architect brought up something that I didn't know with respect to building height and a separation from sunset, fronting sunset, I believe he said. Could staff help me understand that, please?
I believe he's referring to a visual policy in the LUP, the land use plan, which addresses building heights for projects along sunset. And this project does not have a sunset address, and there's also a lot fronting in between it and sunset, so I believe that's the issue.
So the staff's action in recommending that the height be lowered was done for some other reason?
We are recommending that the height be lowered because of our assessment of the potential visual impacts and that the proposed design would be too intrusive in the view shed.
All right.
We've used the 18-foot height as a reasonable height limit for a single-story home.
And the zoning height is what?
The applicant's representative represented the plate height in the zoning is 25 feet, but as I mentioned before, that's not part of the certified LCP. There is no LCP here.
I understand what staff is suggesting and using the Coastal Act, and I agree with that, but in this particular case, whether it's 18 or 19, the way the massing is done and the way the architecture and the scale, I do think the applicant's architect is correct that if it was done today and updated, it would not appear like the original picture. And honestly, that foot is not going to make a difference on that particular house, the way it's designed from here, with the type of materials that he's talking about using. So I would support the deletion in this case, but I do agree with staff what you're trying to achieve. But I don't think it's going to make any difference on the visual from one perspective. Okay. Commissioner Blank?
Just a point of clarification for maybe the applicant or maybe a fellow commissioner. What is the applicant proposing for height of the project?
19 feet.
19 feet?
Right.
I'm going to support Commissioner Potter and Secord's motion as well. Are you suggesting we delete that 2E or and substitute 19 feet? I mean,
well, by deleting 2E, there was a condition in there that limited it to 18 feet.
Right. So but if it's 19 feet, I just don't want a 35-foot house without us.
No, it's not. It's the plans.
I see.
It's
so we're approving the plans as submitted, yeah, which are 19 feet. That's what I just want to. They can't come. They can't now.
No.
Thank you. All right.
Chairman,
I will support the motion.
You have the only house with 35 feet.
Chairman Kerr.
You mean the one you approved, Chairman Kerr, with Commissioner Wan? Yes, that house.
Chairman Kerr.
It was one of my worst votes, I must say. Okay. So there's
Chairman Kerr.
Yes.
Just a clarification. I believe the applicant's representative stated 19 feet at plate height. Our assessment is the all elevation of the house as built would be, the higher elements would be 20 to 22 feet above finished floor elevation. Maybe the applicant's representative could clarify that. So the reduction would be in the total height. We're recommending 18 feet from finished floor elevation. So upwards to 4 feet of reduction in height.
For clarity's sake, could we hear from the applicant?
Yeah, let's hear from the applicant and explain that.
Yeah, no, I did clearly state that it was to plate height, and I used the City of Pacific Grove's zoning code, and that's how they state it. So we're 5 feet lower than is allowed by the City of Pacific Grove zoning code, because that's the only thing that points to any height, because the LUP does not, unless you front sunset. So, but I still feel that it is consistent. I mean, the height, then it fits, and I think the materials and the design fit. So, thank you.
Yeah. I think it's still okay. Yeah. Commissioner Wan?
Yeah. Well, there is a difference between, I agree with Commissioner Plank. I was going to agree, you know, 1 foot difference doesn't make a difference. A 4 foot could make a difference in terms of the view impacts. And since the standard of review is the Coastal Act and view impacts in this area, I think that's what you need to consider, not whether what the zoning ordinance is saying. And so I'm going to agree with staff.
Okay. We have an amending motion to delete 2E. There's a maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. The clerk call the roll.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes.
Commissioner Clark.
Yes.
Commissioner Weso.
Yes.
Commissioner Secor.
Yes.
Commissioner Neely.
Yes.
Commissioner Potter.
Aye.
Commissioner Riley.
Yes.
Commissioner Wan.
No.
Commissioner Ashajian.
Aye.
Chairman Kruer.
Yes.
9-1.
9-1, the amending motion passes and deletion of condition 2E. Then on the main motion, there's a motion and a second, and the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote on the main motion. Would the clerk call the roll? That's okay.
Commissioner Clark.
Yes.
Commissioner Weso.
Yes.
Commissioner Secor.
Yes.
Commissioner Neely.
Yes.
Commissioner Potter.
Aye.
Commissioner Riley.
Yes.
Commissioner Wan.
Yes.
Commissioner Ashajian.
Aye.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes.
Chairman Kruer.
Yes.
Unanimous.
Okay. The commission hereby approves the coastal development permit. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. 7A.
Item 7A are revised findings for the Schneider project in San Luis Obispo County. There is a short addendum to the staff recommendation in your packet that strikes one sentence. We've discussed the revised findings with the applicant, and I believe we are in agreement with the applicant on these revised findings. The commissioners on the prevailing side were Ashajian, Blank, Clark, Hueso, Kinsey, Cram, Kruer, Neely, Potter, Schallenberger, and Wan.
Thank you very much. Any ex parties on this item, on the findings from any of the commissioners? Hearing none. Okay. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. There's one speaker slip here. Marshall Olowski?
Olowski.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Sir?
Yeah, I'm the applicant's representative. I just wanted to say that we were in full agreement with the staff report, and we believe that they accurately represent the discussions, the conditions, and findings when the commission
approved. Your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Marshall Ohilski.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
With that, Mr. Chair.
With that, I'll close the public hearing. And any other comments, staff? No. No other comments? Commissioner Ashajian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, I move that the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on January 10, 2008, approving with conditions the development proposed under appeal number A3SLO00040 pursuant to the staff recommendation, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Akajian, seconded by Commissioner Potter. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote, and passage of this motion will result in the adoption of the resolution's revised findings and conditions as set forth in this staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, sir.
Akajian. Commissioner Potter? Okay. Is there any objection to unanimous of the eligible people? Well, let's just have the eligible people raise their hand to support the motion. Okay. Four.
Okay. It's unanimous.
It's unanimous. Okay. We were still looking to see if some of these hands were going up or down. Okay. 7B. Okay, we'll go to 7B.
7B is also revised findings, and these are for the UCSC Marine Science Campus Coastal Long Range Development Plan that the Commission approved with modifications in December of 2007. There are a couple additional modifications that were added by the Commission at that hearing, and the findings have been updated to reflect support of those modifications. Also in your packet is an informational item which addresses the modifications that were suggested by Commissioner Blank in December and approved by the Commission concerning feasibility language. And I would just point out that that's a work in progress, that document, and but a representation of the kind of language changes we anticipate making in the final certified LCP that the university would act on and then come back to this commission. I believe the university is here
sure.
and available for questions and that we are in agreement with the findings.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Lester. Are there any ex parties on this item? Okay, no ex parties. And again, Mr. Barnes, you're here, but are you here to speak or to answer any questions?
Yes, this is John Barnes. I'm planning director at UC Santa Cruz, and I'm just here to indicate that we're in complete agreement with the staff report and answer questions if necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, that noted, I move the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on December 13, 2007, certifying the UCSC CLRDP with suggested modifications pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Potter, seconded by Commissioner Blank. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the adoption of the following resolutions, revised findings, and suggested modifications as set forth in this staff report. Commissioner Potter, do you wish to speak to this motion?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Blank?
Nope.
Okay. A show of hand of those people eligible to vote. Put their hand up to support the yes vote on this recommendation. It looks unanimous. I'll say unanimous twice and three times for the record. Okay.
Items 7C and D are a consolidated hearing, also revised findings for the Commission's approval of the Pleasure Point, East Cliff Drive, Parkway, and Seawall, also in December of 2007. And we have made changes to the conditions and the findings to reflect the Commission's action. And the county is also here, and I believe they are in agreement with the revised findings. And the commissioners on the prevailing side were Shajian, Blank, Burke, Kruer, Lowenthal, Neely, and Potter.
Okay. Any ex parties on this item, on these revised findings? None. Okay. I'll open the public hearing. Betsy Lindberg.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Betsy Lindberg, Director of the Santa Cruz County Redevelopment Agency, representing the county. We've worked carefully with Coastal Commission staff, scientists of the USGS, and Dr. Gary Griggs of UCSC to develop the surf monitoring program that builds upon the baseline study already completed by the USGS. In addition, since the permit approval in December, we have met with members of the Surfrider Foundation to address their concerns regarding nearshore access in the final design of the project. I'd like to acknowledge and thank the Commission staff for their efforts to coordinate with the county on this project, and we believe that the condition as written will provide more information regarding surf conditions in Pleasure Point, and we are in agreement with the findings. Thank you.
Would you like to reserve? There's a speaker slip, it looks like, in opposition. A couple minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. Deanna Blaister? Dean Blaister? Thank you, sir. And how much? 3 minutes, sir?
Oh, that'll be enough, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. My name is Dean Blaister. I'm from the Santa Barbara chapter of Surfrider Foundation. I'm speaking on behalf of the Santa Cruz chapter and the Surfrider Foundation membership there in regards to the revised findings for the East Cliff Drive Parkway and seawall projects at Pleasure Point. Again, we would like to commend the Commission for approving a condition that requires surf monitoring over the lifetime of the seawall structure. We would like to ask the Commission to speak its intent in approving this monitoring program, specifically the data set collection and evaluation and reporting sections,
sir,
as Surfrider feels that perhaps this intent was not fully captured by the revised findings. As captured in the Purpose and Design Section 12A, the purpose of the monitoring program is to determine if there are significant changes to the Pleasure Point surfing area that may be related to the approved seawalls. Based on the findings in this section, assuming that they reflect the Commission's intent and the likelihood that impacts from the seawall will not create visible impacts to the surf in the near term, the data set collection for the surf conditions should continue as initially prescribed over the lifetime of the seawall projects. This is as opposed to possibly decreasing the data collection based on 10 years of data, which is how this section of the condition is currently written. Consistent, sustained collection of data on surfing conditions for the lifetime of the projects would be fitting to match the consistent, sustained monitoring conditions applied to the seawall structures themselves over the lifetime of the projects. Conversely, while it seems appropriate that the surf conditions data collection should mirror the data collection of the seawall's condition, it seems that the review of these reports may be best handled differently. Solely monitoring the surf conditions would signal if a significant impact is occurring, but it would not directly provide the Commission an opportunity to weigh in on the findings. In light of the fact that the county is required to maintain the seawalls in their approved state, but is not bound by the permit approval to maintain the surfing conditions in their present state, it may be appropriate for the Commission to review the reports on surf conditions in the hearing setting instead of being reviewed only by the Executive Director. In this manner, the Commission would be afforded the opportunity to publicly review and comment upon the findings of which it has a vested interest pursuant to Section 30220. We hope that the Commission can provide clarity on its intent in these two matters. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much, sir. With that, Ms. Lindberg, for your rebuttal time on the findings.
Yes, I'd just like to remind commissioners that there was a condition already applied to the project that requires monitoring of the wall itself every 5 years with an engineer report that will be submitted to the Commission. And that over the long-term period, as the scientists who have evaluated this project have noted, surf conditions will change, and the findings as written require that these changes be attributable to the project and to the wall, and we think that that's an important distinct factor that needs to be distinguished here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing. I'll return back to staff. Dr. Lester.
Thank you. We believe the condition drafted and the findings reflect what the Commission did, and currently the condition on surf monitoring would have that reporting coming to the ED for review and approval. So that concludes staff comments.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Commissioner Potter?
Mr. Chair, I move the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on December 13, 2007, approving with conditions the development proposed under appeal number A-3-SCO-07-015 and CDP application number 3-07-019 pursuant to the staff recommendation.
Second.
And I recommend a yes vote.
No. Moved by Commissioner Potter, seconded by Commissioner Blank. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in the adoption of the following resolutions, revised findings and conditions that are set forth in this staff report. Commissioner Potter, would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thanks.
Commissioner Blank?
No.
Commissioner Wan, do you have a question?
Just a quick question. One of the points that the surfwater asked for clarification was, he says that there was a 10-year limit on the monitoring and wanted a clarification as to whether there should be a 10-year limit or whether the intent was for the life of the project. And I don't know how it was dealt with or whether there was a discussion about that or not. But I should at least answer that question.
Yes, Commissioner Wan, the condition as structured requires two subsequent data sets to be developed equivalent to the original data set, which is a pretty intensive monitoring. And so after that initial, and that's for 5 years and 5 years, after that we would be evaluating and working with the county and the experts as to what sort of continued monitoring would be required for the life of the project.
Does that answer your question? Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Lessig. And with that, again, those commissioners that are eligible to vote, would you raise their hand? The maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote on this thing. I think there's five commissioners eligible. And let the record show that all five vote in the affirmative yes vote. So the commission hereby adopts the findings and conditions set forth in the staff report for the approved conditions of the coastal development permits for this proposed development. Okay, we'll go to 7E.
Finally, 7E are revised findings for the appeal of the Colmer project in Morro Bay, acted on last month by the commission. I do have two minor changes to make to the recommendation as presented. On page 3 of the revised findings in the summary of the commission action section, first paragraph on page 3, corrections of the square feet proposed for the residences, replace 1,704 with 1,400 and replace 1,895 with 1,600 square feet. The other change has been requested by the applicant on page 10. There is a condition concerning tree protection. That's 2E. The applicant has requested that about halfway through that paragraph, the word complete be replaced with the word adequate, so that the operative condition language would be appropriate native trees shall be planted within the development area as necessary to ensure adequate screening of structures from northbound Highway 1. With respect to that change, we don't believe the Commission specifically addressed that in its action. However, that change is not inconsistent with the intent of another change the Commission made, which was to allow two-story development here as opposed to one-story. So staff believes that it may be appropriate if the Commission interprets its action in that way to make that change, although there was no specific amendment made to that condition or language in the Commission's action. And there is a distinction between screening for views from northbound Highway 1 versus the Black Hill Natural Area. Those conditions would not be changed, in our view. So screening, complete screening would be required for Black Hill Natural Area buffer. That concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Ex-parties of any of the commissioners on this item? Commissioner Akajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During our commission meetings, could have been a Wednesday, during one of our breaks, I did talk to Mr. Nash and discuss the issue brought forward by our staff member, Dr. Lester, about the screening process. The discussion was about when this came to us as a one-story the verbiage was to completely screen the view, but since later on the commission approved the project with two-story, that it should have been spelled out into an adequate screening rather than completely screening. That okay. was pretty much what the discussion was about.
And that was niece junior or senior?
The big D.
D1.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I thought you were talking about the good-looking one.
No, he didn't come this time.
Mr. Chair, I had the same conversation with Mr. Nish on Tuesday night, identical to that described by Commissioner Akajian.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. Anyone else? Okay. And with that, I'll open the public hearing, and we'll call up Dave Nish, Sr. How much time are you requesting, sir?
30 seconds.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Dave Nish. With the changes that Charles just discussed, we do concur with the findings as proposed. And I'd like to compliment staff. This, I think, is the first time in my 30-year career where the hearing was held last month and the findings are before you this month. So I'd like to compliment Charles and his staff for that. Thank you.
It's because we have four analysts working.
Yeah, I want to know how he did it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for those comments. Okay, with that, I'll return to Commissioner Akajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like for clarification, if I may ask Dr. Lester, if the wording from complete to adequate, is that it's in there?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
With that, Mr. Chair, I move the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on March 6, 2008, approving with conditions the development proposed under Appeal CDP application number A3MRB06064 pursuant to the staff recommendation. Recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Commissioner Akajian, seconded by Commissioner Secord. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. And passage of this motion will result in the adoption of the resolutions, revised findings, and conditions as set forth in this staff report. Commissioner Akajian, do you wish to speak to your motion?
No, sir, and I also thank staff for expediting their findings and bringing it back to the Commission.
Thank you. Commissioner Secord, is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the Commission unanimously approves or hereby adopts the findings and conditions set forth in the staff report for the approval and conditions of the coastal development permit for this proposed development. And with that, before we go into energy, ocean resources, and federal consistency, I've had requests for a 10-minute bio break.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, then we're going to go back to the item that we trailed from yesterday, the recommendation on Proposition 98.
That's fine. Yeah, I need some water, too.
Get some coffee.
Cup.
That's the one problem. There's no water.
There is a listing. Is there a listing that people on that? I didn't know. I didn't see a listing.
Okay, if we could get going again. Again, we're going to start up and continue, and we're going to start with a report on discuss Prop 98 that we trailed over for yesterday before we go into energy, ocean resources, and the North Coast. So with that, Ms. Schmelzer, do you want to, after everybody quiets down here for a second?
Yes, thank you. Are we ready?
I think we're ready. It's
just okay, thank you. Proposition 98 is the successor proposition to Proposition 90, which this commission took a position opposing in September of 2006. Staff is recommending an opposed position here as well. The Commission may take positions on initiatives for advisory and informational purposes. It may not advocate or campaign for initiatives, and we believe that that's what we're asking the Commission to do here. And the information in your packet and that's available on the Commission website gives information about the effect that this proposition may have on the Commission and its actions. The United States and California constitutions already require that just compensation be paid for the taking of private property for public use. Generally, Proposition 98 would amend the California Constitution to limit government's ability to exercise eminent domain or takings, and at the same time broaden the definition of taking and private use while narrowing the definition of public use, which results in expansion of the potential for findings of takings and regulatory takings. Proposition 90 would also eliminate rent control and mandatory affordable housing programs, although we do not focus on those effects for this analysis. Proposition 98 may have a broader impact on the Coastal Commission than Proposition 90, because unlike Proposition 90, there is no grandfather clause for existing regulations, so we don't know how it will be applied to existing regulations. The changes are both broad and vague, so we do anticipate that there will be litigation to determine how the new provisions will be interpreted, and there will be much uncertainty about how those will be interpreted until there is litigation on all of the different new definitions and how they apply both in the future and to existing regulations. Another change would be the courts would substitute their judgment for that of public agencies in findings on public use. Right now, in eminent domain proceedings, public agencies make findings, and the courts give deference to those findings. That would change. It also is more generous in granting attorney's fees to private property owners in takings litigation, which we believe would increase the amount of litigation. Some of the ways it may affect commission actions, although, again, there would be litigation to determine this, and these are not positions that staff would take, but some of the arguments we expect we would hear, would be that offers to dedicate or deed restrictions allowing public entities to use private property for open space may be considered takings under this proposition, which would require just compensation. Further, it could prohibit private nonprofits from accepting offers to dedicate because that could be considered a transfer of private property for a private use. Applicants might claim that special conditions requiring OTDs constitute a taking. In addition, requirements to keep space to keep open space dedicated to open space could be considered takings or could be considered prohibited because it could be considered that a public agency is taking the property for the same use that it is already in, which would be prohibited under Proposition 98. There is also provisions in Prop 98 that prohibit the transfer of ownership, occupancy, or use of private property for the consumption of natural resources. This could have an impact on water supply issues in California and prevent public agencies from acquiring water rights or land on which to build water projects such as reservoirs or other water storage or transfers. This could increase pressure on the Commission to approve desalination projects and thus create increased adverse impacts to fishery and water quality in the coastal zone. We also believe that Proposition 98, like Proposition 90, would have a big deterrent effect on the amending of LCPs by local government because regardless of its application to existing land use regulation, it would apply to new regulations or anything considered such as LCP amendments. If the commissioners have any questions, I can also answer those.
Well, there are two other concerns that we have and why we're recommending opposition. Unlike Proposition 90, Proposition 98 does not have a grandfather clause. It's not clear that it's prospective only. And so the whole question of whether or not it can be applied retroactively will create some real legal issues. The other another concern is that it prohibits the transfer of an economic benefit to another private party. And when an agency regulates private property, for example, maintaining heights or setbacks or other kinds of controls that benefit a community, one could argue that that's an economic benefit for the neighbor, somebody else, and that could be argued as being prohibited by this measure. For all those reasons, we're recommending the Commission take a position of oppose. To supplement one thing that Hope mentioned, the Commission cannot, under the law, campaign on behalf for or against a measure, but you can educate. And that is something, because I was involved in a lot of discussions and panel discussions on Proposition 90 when that was before the voters. And my role, and as many of the commissioners were too, was to educate. Here are the implications for your California Coastal Protection Program. And that's permissible as long as you're not out urging people to vote one way or the other. So with that, if you have any questions.
Commissioner Wan.
I move the commission take a position to oppose.
It has been moved by Commissioner Wan and seconded by Commissioner Clark. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Yeah, just briefly. I think the staff outlined it pretty well. This could have very serious consequences to our ability to regulate development under the Coastal Act. It sounds like it could conceivably undo our entire public access program, particularly if it were applied retroactively. I can see all of those people who want to undo all their public access easements. So I look at this as sort of son of Sam, maybe worse than Sam. So.
Commissioner Clark.
This is really a Trojan horse, quite frankly. Prop 90 was narrowly defeated. Not only does this bill, 98, under the guise of eminent domain reform, attempt to deceive, I think, the voters of California with respect to what it does, but it, as staff has articulated, has very deleterious effects for the Coastal Commission, and it has tremendously deleterious effects for local governments all throughout the state. It would, in essence, paralyze local governments in terms of their ability to work land use decisions and issues. It takes away their ability to effectively regulate land use in local jurisdictions. If you want to see what this really is like, all you have to do is look at the state of Oregon, because a similar initiative passed in Oregon, and it has absolutely crippled the state of Oregon from a land use standpoint. So I highly speak in favor of the opposition of this initiative.
Commissioner Wasil.
Yes, thank you. And not to mention the effect that this would have on the Coastal Commission's ability to protect the coastline. We took an action recently that removed a gate from a gated community. And somebody mentioned to me that that had a value of about $26 million to the development. If we did that in the future under this law, we would be liable to pay the developer that $26 million. And if we didn't remove the gate, if we supported the gate, we would have a lawsuit from the other side, from the neighboring community, suing us for coastal access and what monetary value that would have. They would claim we would be subject to that. So there is no win-win here. We wouldn't be able to protect the coastline, and in trying to do nothing, we'd also be liable. It would basically make the Coastal Commission inexistent in terms of policy. The origin of this is very, very unfortunate how this proposition came to be. Following the defeat of Prop 90, the California League of Cities sat down with Howard Jarvis and said, "Let's come up with a proposition to regulate eminent domain that we can all support." And as they were proceeding down that path, the apartment owners came in and offered a lot of money to Howard Jarvis to create a bill that not only protected their interests, but has another clause that eliminates rent control in parts of the state that already have it. So this is kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing. It's a deception to the public. And if they're going to have an anti-rent control bill, that's what they should call it, not cloak it as a eminent domain reform bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Wiesel. Anyone else before staff, anything else you'd like to mention? Ms. Schmelzer?
This has been said twice now, but I do just want to emphasize to the Commission that this is an educational and informational position that the Commission takes, and commissioners may provide information to the public about this, but may not campaign or advocate as commissioners. Yes, okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Kajian and Commissioner Clark has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the council clarify? I'm not really sure as what we're doing. We're taking a position at the same time we're not supposed to.
No, that's not. I'm sorry. Let me clarify. The commission may take a position based on the effect that it believes it would have on the coastal program, and in doing so, inform the public about the impact that this proposition would have on the coastal program. However, it may not campaign on either for or against an initiative. This is not telling people how to vote. It is telling people what the effect would be on the coastal program.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, but isn't, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. But isn't the message, as we take a position, isn't the message out there as lobbying effort to address the issue that we as a body have taken a position against it, therefore those who look into us favorably should be against it?
That is an inference that somebody could draw in understanding what impact it would have on the Coastal Commission and the Coastal Program. However, the Commission will not spend public money promoting one position or another. It is issuing a staff report that identifies the reasons that it believes that it opposes this proposition because of the negative impacts it would have on the coastal program, and that is permissible. However,
so it shouldn't be just based on staffs educating us rather than us taking a position. Shouldn't then our process be just receiving the education rather than taking a position?
Well, staff is making a recommendation based on the information that we're providing to you about the impacts to the coastal program. Many of the commissioners, we believe, are already familiar with some of the impacts, either to the coastal program or, as Commissioner Clark stated, he understood some other impacts, which we didn't focus on because they don't affect the coastal program.
Well, except it does affect local government's ability to carry out their responsibility under the Coastal Act as well.
Right.
So this is the commission has a history of taking positions on legislation. This is citizen legislation, but it's still legislation.
Right.
So education's okay, campaigning is.
We won't ask you for any money, Commissioner Kajian.
Point of clarification.
Mr. Blank?
This is for, through the chair, the staff council. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't, as individuals, do anything that screw us up here. So if we take positions as individuals, including campaign contributions, et cetera, can you just make sure, either directly or through organizations that we're part of who might also take positions, are we going to get sideways?
You are free as an individual to take positions and to donate money. That is something you are free to do as an individual. You may not, as a commissioner, as part of your official position, campaign.
So
you could not direct commission money be spent.
Let me just be clear, because this sometimes can happen either on purpose or by accident. What if this organization says, oh, Steve Blank, Coastal Commissioner? So do I have to make sure that I am never quoted as a commissioner taking?
Yes.
That, Is that correct?
That's correct.
So well, even though it might be an individual action, if my name shows up on a list, it could might say Audubon, California, but it cannot say Coastal Commission. Is that correct?
Right. However, if this commission takes a position of oppose, and an organization was listing organizations that oppose this bill, we would not object to them listing a position that this commission, as a commission, took. But
there's another point here, though, too. You can't control what other people do. And I know in the Prop 90 campaign, there were a number of cases where individual commissioners and me personally, we were listed, but our titles or our affiliation was also included.
That's right.
That's different from you taking a position or taking action in your capacity as a commissioner, where you say, I, Steve Blank, as a member of the Coastal Commission, am giving you this. If they use your name and then say, and he's a Coastal Commissioner, you can't control that.
Right.
So that's
okay.
Peter, just for clarification on the law, it's not a question of whether you can control it or not. If you say, you know, Steve Blank, California Coastal Commissioner, and there's a little asterisk, and it says, for purposes of identification only, that is legally permissible. Okay, so that's just a that is what the law specifies. So as long as you make certain that they never just say Steve Blank, Coastal Commissioner, without that disclaimer, that's the point you have to be careful.
Or they might say Steve Blank, and they might not know what your last name is.
Arnold, I thought it was. That was Arnold.
Boy, you picked those things up quickly. Commissioner Clark.
Is my CDP under review now, is that?
You know, Hope, on the same vein, but just to make sure that we're clear, and I know this, but for those of us that are elected, locally elected officials, publicly elected officials, we certainly in under our auspices of our offices, local offices, can do all the things we talked about, you know, as a council member, a mayor, a county supervisor, et cetera. Correct?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, but not in your capacity as a commissioner.
Yeah, but I just wanted to get that on the record.
Okay, are there any other commissioners that want to comment? Commissioner Kashian?
And I apologize, Mr. Chair, for my ignorance here, but we as a commissioner will take a stand. So if you're the media and come to me and say, Commissioner Oshajian, you took a stand as commissioners to oppose this bill, so are you opposing it? Then you're saying that I shouldn't say yes as an individual. We collectively did, and I'm a member of that collective body.
If you're asked that question, you may answer that the commission took a position opposing the bill for the reasons stated, and you can either...
And I, as a commissioner, supported my collective commission, so what... And I'm still a commissioner.
Yes. You may state your... Again, for informational purposes, you may do that. What you can't do is go out and campaign as a commissioner, either for or against an initiative.
But it was handpicked in a
yes.
body of
you can,
circle
you can make
of
a,
whatever, and somebody said, you as a commissioner objected this, which what
you
you're
may
asking
answer the
us
question.
To do publicly, and the answer is yes.
Yes, you may answer the question.
And
absolutely.
Somebody might take that as an elected official, campaign, picture someplace that is supporting, and I cannot deny that because here publicly we're just
mm-hmm.
doing that.
And somebody else can take that and you can't control that. But to the extent, and for example, this did happen, to the extent that somebody else tries to take the commission's action and turn it into campaign literature, I have requested that people not do that because... We are not in the business of campaigning here. We are providing information about the coastal program.
In the immortal words of my friend Dave Potter, you can't be F. Lee Bailey. Okay. Okay. We have a motion and a second, and both the maker and second are asking for a yes vote to oppose this legislation. If there isn't any further debate, Is there any objection to unanimous yes roll call vote in opposing this legislation? Hearing no objection, it's unanimously approved.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that brings us to the energy, ocean resource, and consistency part of the agenda, and I just want to call your attention to an addendum to the agenda that's out, and that's a public notice relative to the coastal management program, and that follows through on what we had indicated to you before and the legislature, Department of Finance, and legislative analysts, that we are seeking federal authorization to require fees for federal for projects that require federal licenses so that those fees can be collected by the state. And I think ultimately they're going to be able to be used by the commission for our operations.
Just for the public's sake, this is the role here, starting with the North Coast, where our executive director also becomes our director for this area. So he's doing a yeoman's job here. He's covering both areas. So I just want to notice that for the public.
For the player as well.
He does.
The only other thing I want to call to your attention is the notice on the agenda about the four workshops that the Coastal Commission is co-sponsoring for water quality purposes. These are LID, the called low-impact development design measures to reduce runoff, storm runoff from development sites and develop property. I think these have, we've already had some. They're very useful, popular. The demand for these is really high, and I'm very pleased to see that. That's part of the educational program that the Commission has to help educate on protecting water quality. This work is not general fund supported. This is special water quality fund money that's going into this. Just for your information. They're actually working with us on
Director Douglas, do you need any concurrence on any of these
No,
items?
That's just informational.
Okay.
Since I had my report truncated last night, I thought I'd catch up now. That brings us to energy and ocean resources, and I have one immaterial amendment to report to you, and I just want to point out that the pink sheet that you have on that is slightly in error. It's, this deals with Pacific Gas and Electric. It would substitute an existing or previously identified 1.2-acre site wetland area for enhancement, not creation, which is what's on your notice. It's for enhancement, and it'll be replaced by another 1.2-acre site for enhancement as well. So it's enhancement for enhancement. It's just a different site, and that's an immaterial amendment. And then we have an emergency permit, and unless there are any objections, those will be issued.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Okay, that then brings us to the North Coast, and I have we've handed out pink addendum. We have several permit waivers there. We have received no correspondence on those and don't know of any objections. So,
any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
And then we have a number of pieces of correspondence for the North Coast that that's been handed out to you. As Charles indicated, we have moved item 14A to the consent calendar. This is the North Coast Railroad. And I did want to just comment on a couple of items that were raised in the correspondence that we received. This is a repair and maintenance to an existing embankment for the North Coast Railroad on the shores of Humboldt Bay. Part of the project that's being proposed was given an emergency permit. This is the follow-on permit. But there were a couple of letters raised that question the absence of any public access conditions relative to a trail along the alignment of the railroad. This is a very long-standing controversial issue locally about using the railroad right-of-way for a trail. We see no nexus between this repair and maintenance project and a trail along the entire alignment here. We don't think that legally there's a basis to require an access dedication for a trail. We're very supportive of providing a trail along this alignment. We've been talking to the Railroad Authority as well as Caltrans about accommodating a trail along this stretch of Humboldt Bay, but this is not the place to do it. The other issue that was raised was involving litigation by the City of Novato against the Railroad Authority, questioning the piecemeal approach to some of their activities relative to repair and maintenance of the line in its entirety. There are other areas of the line along the Eel River, for example, that require major repair work. The issue raised in the litigation really involves CEQA questions. They're not relevant to the Commission's deliberations here. So from our perspective, that's an issue for the courts and CEQA, not for the Coastal Commission, so we think that concern is not relevant to your consideration, and we recommend that the matter stay on the consent calendar and that you approve it as per the staff recommendation.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to tag on to the Executive Director's synopsis, in November we're going to be going back to the ballot for passenger rail service on this same line from Cloverdale through Marin County, about 70 miles on the southern end of the North Coast Rail rail line. And that particular project does have a multi-use trail for all 70 miles of the of the area on the southern end.
Thank you, Commissioner Riley, for that. And any ex partes on this? Yes, Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I received a call from Mike Wilson, a Harbor District Commissioner. He had concerns about the Novato lawsuit, and I directed that he talk with staff. I got a call from Chris Rawl from Green Wheels. He also had questions regarding the same item. And I also had a call from Pete Nichols, Humboldt Bay Keeper, with questions about the railroad issue as well, and I referred him to staff.
Thank you. Any other commissioners on 14A and the ex partes? If not, Vice Chair Neely?
Yeah, I would move approval of the consent calendar.
Moved by Vice Chair Neely, seconded by Commissioner Riley. Both the maker and seconder asking for a yes vote. Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on the consent calendar? Hearing none, the consent calendar is unanimously approved.
That brings us to
12B.
12A.
12A, I'm sorry, 12A.
It's the City of Arcata amendment to their local coastal program. The staff recommends that the Commission certify the LCP amendment as submitted. The purpose of the amendment is to accommodate a planned development project called the Alliance Meadow Planned Development Project, which would require certification of this LCP amendment to proceed, and future development planned for the site would be subject to a development permit and a coastal permit from the city. So this is not approving a specific development. It's just authorizing what's called an overlay zone. From our perspective, the planned or the combining zone allows greater flexibility in the residential types and sizes and styles and affordability while providing larger open space areas and protected natural areas. The combining zone does not expand the allowable uses, does not increase the maximum allowable density of the units or people per acre permissible under the zoning amendment here, or the plan amendment. And so we recommend that you approve the LCP amendment as submitted, and there are a couple of motions required that appear on pages 3 and 4 of your staff report.
Okay. Are there any ex parties on this item? No ex parties. Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Commission certify Land Use Plan Amendment Number ARC-MAJ-1-08 as submitted by the City of Arcata and recommend a yes vote.
It's been moved by Vice Chair Neely and seconded by Commissioner Akajian, and both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Akajian? Is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission approves the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That
have
brings
one
us.
More, I think, isn't
yes.
there? One more
oh,
motion.
I'm sorry.
I move that the commission reject implementation program amendment number ARC-MAJ-1-08 for the City of Arcata, submitted and recommended no vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Vice Chair Neely, seconded by Commissioner Akajian. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a no vote. Failure of this motion will result in the certification of the implementation program as submitted and adoption of the resolutions and findings contained in the staff report. Vice Chair Neely, do you wish to speak to your motion?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Akajian?
No, sir.
Is there any objection to a unanimous no roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission hereby certifies the implementation program for the City of Arcata as submitted and adopts the findings that are set forth in the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That brings us to item 12B. This is the City of Eureka LCP amendment, and the executive director's checkoff, and we're just here to report that the Eureka City Council took the necessary actions to accept the suggested modifications adopted by the commission and to implement the previously certified LCP amendment as modified, and recommend that you concur in the executive director's determination.
You have no speakers.
Is there any objection to concurring with the executive director's determination? Hearing none, the commission concurs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That brings us to item 13B, since A was postponed. And this is the Bauer appeal. This is
13B.
Appeal. Item 13B, you see the number there. The item has been, or this action by the County of Mendocino has been appealed by, I believe it was three appellants here. They raised a number of issues that they believe raise substantial issues. The staff agrees that four of the assertions do raise substantial issues as to consistency with the LCP. Whether this proposed wall is necessary to protect existing development, the limitations on bluff face development, questions relative to geologic hazards, and finally questions relative to impacts on public access and recreation. We're recommending that the commission find substantial issue, and unless three or more commissioners want to have a debate on substantial issue, you will have found it. And we will bring this back for a de novo hearing at a subsequent meeting of the commission.
Thank you, Director Douglas. Are there any ex parties on this item?
Mine are on file.
Okay. Anyone else? If not, do three or more commissioners object to finding substantial issue? Hearing none, the commission has found substantial issue.
And having completed the North Coast agenda without incurring the expense of having staff travel here, we're finished.
We have some public
comments. Oh, well, we're finished here at the table.
Yeah.
I know we have, 10 public comments?
Right here. Okay. Public comments. Mr. Massara. And after Massara, Mayor Dick DeWeese. Mr. Massara, 3 minutes, sir.
That'll be more than enough. Honorable Chair, Commissioners, Mark Massara, Sierra Club. We wanted to share with you our continuing interest in developing specific coastal land use and environmental strategies for dealing with climate change. You'll recall that last year you held a workshop that was well attended and very informative. And at that time, it was indicated that you'd have future workshops and hearings on this, and we would urge you to continue that process. And also to mention that the PUC in California has just established a $600 million California Institute for Climate Change that's going to be giving over $50 million a year in grants to develop strategies to deal with climate change. And I think there's a perfect opportunity here, since so many of us ratepayers live in the coastal zone, to invite the PUC and their efforts to support your efforts. Their program is supported by the Air Board, and I know that Commissioner Burke is also working on strategies, and perhaps some of those funds and resources could be used so that all of our efforts can be coordinated. Thank you.
Good idea, Mr. Massara. Director Douglas, would you like to comment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We did present one workshop to you already, and we indicated that we were going to follow up with additional workshops. And we are planning to present the second follow-up workshop here at the December meeting. So that's our plan at this point.
Okay, that's good. Okay, Mayor Dick DeWeese. 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Dick DeWeese, and I am Mayor of the City of Lompoc. And residents of the City of Lompoc have been good stewards of the surf and ocean beach, ocean beaches and cities of cooperation 120 years ago. Surf and ocean beaches are two of the last pristine beaches on the California coast, and the citizens of Lompoc want to keep them that way. We are very protective of what we consider to be our beaches, even though they are not part of our city limits. Since 1999, the beaches have been taken away from us, March through September virtually, by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So every year, so the Western Snowy Plover can honeymoon on the beaches. It's because it is only because of our good relationship with our neighbors at Vandenberg Air Force Base that we have had any access at all during that period. Vandenberg Air Force Base has spent millions of dollars over the last 9 years to mitigate the requirements of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The Western Snowy Plover habitat extends from the Pacific Northwest all the way through Baja California. Yet surf and ocean beaches are the rare exceptions where access is virtually cut off for local residents 6 months out of the year. When I asked the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service representative why that was, the response was, because we can. They know that they're not going to get sued by another federal agency. The Western Snowy Plover, who's, by the way, whose DNA is virtually the same as the other plover populations found 600 miles inland, can also be found on other beaches in the area, such as Pismo Beach and even down here in the Santa Barbara Goleta area on their beaches. Radical environmental groups applaud this, closure of surf and ocean beaches, and are silent when it comes to non-federal beaches where the snowy plover nests. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does not shut down the other beaches because they're not on federal property, and plus it would be bad for their tourist industry. At the other beaches up and down the coast, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has found ways for the Western Snowy Plover and the citizens and humans to cohabitate. And commissioners, what I'm asking you to do is for your help. We need an influential group like you to step up and be an advocate for the citizens of the Lompoc Valley to bring some common sense to this issue. Surf and ocean beaches are and should not be treated with less respect than other areas where the plover nests yet remain open during the nesting season. Please help us, help the citizens of the Lompoc Valley bring some, get our beaches back, is basically what I'm asking. So thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Director Douglas?
Just in summary, this commission has a long history of dealing with the protection of endangered and threatened species. You have dealt with the conflict of protecting threatened and endangered species and public access on many occasions, and you have weighed the conflicting interests. The Coastal Act does give priority to the protection of threatened and endangered species, and you have also worked to ensure that public access is provided so long as it doesn't interfere with the nesting and population health of endangered and threatened species. So there are issues relative to public access at Point Sal, that relate to the road and the Air Force's issuance of citations for people going out there. And we have told the Air Force that they need to come back for consistency determination or review here unless they work through an agreement, which they're working on with the County of Santa Barbara, to allow continued access. But that's different from interference with the snowy plover restrictions. Those restrictions this commission has implemented and supported because it has required your action. We've done it at Oceana Dunes. We've done it at here in Santa Barbara and a number of places and at Vandenberg Air Force Base. So there's nothing unusual about what is being done in light of the fact that this species is, in fact, endangered.
Thank you, Director Douglas. Commissioner Wan?
Yes, just to sort of reinforce that, the protection of the western snowy plover is particularly important because that species is really highly endangered, and I take exception to the fact, the statement that it's the same as the populations inland. It's been shown both genetically and behaviorally that the coastal population is distinct. And it's in real jeopardy. And yesterday we heard testimony that the population at Vandenberg had dropped precipitously by 60%. So while we're strong supporters of public access, the truth is that this is the very existence of a species. And this commission has a responsibility to the people of this state and to everyone to make sure that we don't impact the biodiversity of this world and eliminate a species. And so the road is one thing, that's correct, but public access to the beach is going to have to be dealt with in the context of protecting the snowy plover.
Thank you, Commissioner Wan. Anyone else? If not, Terry Nishish? I'm sorry.
May Supervisor Gray go before me?
Sure. Supervisor Gray.
Thank you. And it appears that someone left their phone down here. Oh, it belongs to you. Okay. Thank you very much. And I was delighted to hear what Commissioner Wong and Mr. Douglas had to say about
Supervisor,
the concern.
Could you state your name for the record?
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm Joni Gray, Supervisor, Santa Barbara County. I represent Lompoc, Guadalupe, and the Orcutt area. I'm here basically to ask you to help the residents of Lompoc regain beach access. And I heard the conversation with Mr. Douglas and Commissioner Wan, and they're right. They're right. The snowy plover needs to be protected, and we've done everything, fencing, locking, docents, all types of projects. I would venture to guess that Vandenberg alone has spent $250,000 to $500,000 a year to try and do something, and nothing's been done. As you saw, as Commissioner Waugh said, it's not working. Now, there is an obstacle to access to the beach at surf and ocean. And we already talked about Point Sal also. The reason I'm concerned is because of time. I brought this newspaper with me, and it was written in 1959. I have copies if any of you want it. It says, Point Sal State Park reopening possible. 1959. So we have been denied access off and on, up and down at Point Sal since 1959, and here it comes with surf and ocean. And I'm here in front of the Coastal Commission saying, please help us get access. We want to protect the bird. We want to do the right thing. But we also want to see those folks at Lompoc, and for that matter, from all over the world, have access to surf in Ocean Beach, and we're working on Point Sal. I mean, Supervisor Firestone himself was up there trying to help get that trail blazed. But when the guy from Keokuk, Kansas, drives to Lompoc so they can see the Pacific Ocean, gets out of the car, walks out, ignores the signs, ignores the guards, steps on the snowy plover,
It's not working. For 10 years, we've tried to make this work, and it's not. So please help us. I'm hoping that the next time some federal project comes up, you might just say, why don't you get more access for those folks from Lompoc, and then we'll be happy to approve your project. So that's what we're asking for, and thanks again. And if anyone wants a copy of this 1959 Santa Maria Times, where we finally got a little bit of access to Point Sal, it's yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Gray. And we want to, on behalf of the Commission, Commissioner Gray, Supervisor Gray, we want to thank you for the use of your chambers as we did Supervisor Wolf yesterday. We're very.
I wish you'd come back every single time because it really generates some excitement and it's a beautiful place to be and we'd love to have you. And so every time we'd love to have you here.
Well, thank you very much,
thank
Supervisor
you.
Gray.
I'm glad we heard that for the record. That's
yeah.
great. We'll be back. I should note that the commission, but for the Coastal Commission, about 3 miles of access on Vandenberg would not have been achieved but for the requirement by the Commission in conjunction with the space shuttle program that was initiated at Vandenberg. In order to approve that, this Commission required 3 miles of access there. The shuttle program never was developed because of the disaster to the shuttle that Challenger. However, the access was required because some of the improvements were made. So this commission is very concerned and and promoting of public access there. It's a question of balancing it with the species needs.
Thank you very much. Terry Nish, 3 minutes, ma'am.
Absolutely. Good morning, Chair Crew and members of the Commission. Welcome back to Santa Barbara County. We are happy to have you here. My name is Terry Nisich. I'm the Assistant CEO for the County of Santa Barbara. I've been asked to read into the record a letter adopted unanimously by our Board of Supervisors. It was adopted by the Board on March 18, 2008. I believe you do have copies, but I did want to read it again just to follow up on the prior speaker comments. Dear Chair Crewer, the Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors respectfully request the assistance of the California Coastal Commission in restoring public access to surf, ocean, and Point Sal beaches. These beaches provide coastal access for the residents of the Lompoc Valley and are important tourist destinations for the people from all over the world. Since 1999, coastal access has been prohibited at Ocean Beach and significantly restricted at Surf Beach for 7 months of the year, from March 1 through September 30th. These closures have been the result of plover requirements. Point Sal Beach has been closed to the public by the Department of Defense since the beginning of 2007 due to an access dispute. The Memorandum of Understanding / Evacuation Agreement of 1992 between the County and the Department of Defense memorializes the historic public use of Halama, Surf, Ocean, and Point Sal beaches. In part, this MOU documents the public rights to access 5 miles of shoreline, 1.5 miles north and 3.5 miles south from Ocean Beach County Park. This agreement was negotiated as part of a Coastal Zone Management Act consistency determination involving the construction of a project at Vandenberg Air Force Base, which restricted public access to some of the county's coastal parks during space launches. Coastal access is a matter of great importance to the people of Santa Barbara County. The Board of Supervisors therefore respectfully requests the Commission's assistance in restoring the public's right to full access at Surf, Ocean, and Point Sal beaches. In furtherance of this goal, the County requests that the Coastal Commission calendar a discussion of this issue at its earliest opportunity at a public hearing accessible to the residents of the Lompoc Valley. Again, this was approved by the full Board of Supervisors on March 18, 2008. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Dean Plaster? Thank you, sir.
Commissioners and Mr. Chairman, my name is Dean Plaster. This time speaking on issues at Goleta Beach as a member of the Executive Committee of Surfrider Santa Barbara Chapter. I am speaking on my own behalf. I would like to express my opposition to the actions by county government to seek permits and assessment funding for a groin project to parallel Goleta Pier in advance of the completion of a final EIR. In so doing, the county has disregarded testimony by experts which contradict the notion that that this groin would be environmentally safe. It also presupposes that this is the environmentally preferred alternative, which it is not. Given that this project requires some 80-plus acres of offshore dredging, may well rob downshore beaches of sand supply, and will produce enormous amounts of sea mammal disturbing noise during construction, there must be a better way. Indeed, Surfrider Foundation and the Environmental Defense Center have assembled a distinguished panel of coastal scientists and engineers to design plans that will be effective and far less environmentally disruptive. Definitely a preferred alternative. As these superior methods are implemented, we would hope to see the removal of the so-called emergency rock revetments, which have stood in place unpermitted at Goleta Beach for quite a long time. Hard coastal armoring is well known to cause beach scouring and shrinkage, as well as contribute to aesthetic degradation and access impediment. The rocks and groin represent a fight-the-sea mentality. You can fight the sea, but in the long run, the beachscape will always lose. Please do not support hard structures on our coastline, and do give encouragement to environmentally sensitive solutions that allow for managed realignment of the beachfront. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Matthew Kramer. Three minutes, sir.
Fellow commissioners, I come to you to speak to in opposition to the current...
Your name for the record, sir?
What's that?
Your name?
Oh, my name is Matthew Hunter Kramer. Okay. I live up the street in Santa Barbara, and I'm a biodiesel producer in North County and Buellton. And I speak in opposition to the deal struck between Plains Exploration Company over the gas processing plant and trying to end oil drilling. This is a bait and switch. They've given the environmental groups a lot of worthless land that's polluted and is it actually is a lost leader to these oil companies. They're trying to push it onto the public to take care of while they've, you know, gone through and not obeyed the regulations to begin with. Additionally, this allows drilling in the channel, which is something that is unacceptable to a coastal commission that has seen the 1969 oil spill decimate the economic county impact here. And we cannot afford in the middle of a recession to have another oil spill. So I ask you to look at this very carefully, to look at the deal being offered, and to realize that in the state of California, there are no taxes on oil drilled in the state, meaning that you're giving them this oil free without any sort of responsibility to the taxpayers to whom it belongs to. And I think that's wrong. I think that's without due process. I think that this is an attempt by the oil companies to slide something in before the regulations change and cut off a lot of tax loopholes. Don't let them do this. Please oppose strongly this measure, which would allow slant drilling in the northern portion of this channel, which is way too close to my house and to the beautiful view that is right outside your office building. Thank you very much.
Director Douglas.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Blank brought this to my attention. I saw it in the LA Times this morning as well. We did get an alert from the groups that are involved in this, and we'll report to you at the next meeting. This is a matter that will come to this commission for your action. I just don't know what the timing of it is. We'll give you an update at the next meeting.
Yeah. Thank you. Bruce Heyman. And then Jesse Allstat.
Good morning. Bruce Heyman, Dana Point Boaters Association. Commissioner, Chair, and staff, thank you very much for your patience this week. I know it's a long week, and thanks for being so open. We appreciate it. Today I'd like to talk to you about a difficult subject, compliance. Over the last year and a quarter, the association, the Dana Point Boaters Association, has had the opportunity to learn more about the Coastal Act, and our respect for the Act has grown with understanding. During this journey, we've begun the process of trying to match up the changes that have occurred in Dana Point Harbor with the various public processes such as LCP or CDPs. We now fully understand the genealogy of our LCP, and we feel it will prove very helpful when we take up the harbor's commercial expansion LCP that will be before you later this year. We would like to thank the commission staff in the Long Beach office for their help with the LCP's history and help allowing us to plow through the card catalog of all the CDPs and facilitating the delivery of the documents from Sacramento for our review. We have engaged with the City of Dana Point to review the CDPs that have been issued by them since 1991 and have begun the since they received the LCP. While we have more due diligence to complete, it has become obvious that many changes have occurred within our harbor without the benefit of a public process. With the appropriate support from the City of Dana Point, we hope to have this phase wrapped up by the end of May, and we'll report back to you at that time. So the problem before our board and the association and our membership is what now to do with this information and how to deal with it. One thing that we've already clarified with staff in Long Beach is that as future member matters come before you, we'll be able to use this for the baseline of our analysis and not the current state that's existing in the harbor. As the harbor was designed before the creation of the Coastal Act, we also now have from the Army Corps of Engineers the original design documents, which can be used as the baseline. Given the current Coastal Commission budget, situation, workload already on the Commission staff, we're not inclined to steal a chapter from Dr. DeLange's book on how to sue and get a public review. However, it should be noted that this LCP has never benefited from a review by your staff. Given the joint desire to see the scarce Coastal Commission staff prioritized on truly important matters, we ask for your guidance on how to balance action versus no action, compliance versus noncompliance. Your ideas would be much appreciated. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Jesse Allstadt.
Okay, thanks.
3 minutes, ma'am.
Hi, okay. Good morning. I'm Jesse Altstadt. I am a local resident of the city of Goleta, and I'm also the science director for Santa Barbara Channel Keeper, and we've been before you many times on local issues. Our mission statement is to protect and restore the watersheds and the channel. And so the issue I'm talking about today is not on your agenda. It's just something that bothers me because Goleta Beach is my local beach, and I drive past it almost every single day. I'm here to talk to you about what's known commonly as the jug handle, and I'm showing you an aerial photograph that I took in 2006. This is Ward Memorial Drive, 217. This is Goleta Beach here. Sorry for the shakiness. And this area right here is known as the jug handle, and it is an area that has been under constant damage from off-roading vehicles that illegally enter the property. Oops. Sorry. F. Okay, forward. This is just a close-up. I just wanted to show you. This is the. This is going to UCSB here. This is Sandspit Road down along the bottom, and this is the entrance to Goleta Beach. And you should notice that there actually is a fence that currently exists around part of the property. I believe it's on the Caltrans right away. It's down kind of on the salt pan right here. However. Gosh, I really had too much coffee here. There is no fence on this area where the road is closest to the wetland. And so here's just a close view so you can actually see that fence. And this is the problem. People enter in here in their trucks, and they drive around. They get all crazy, and they tear up the salt pan. This is a picture I took from 2005. In 2006, the county placed some rocks here under a permit from you guys, and I should say that there is an application on file with your staff to deal with this problem, but it's been ongoing for several years. The file number is 406169. February 2006, the problem continues. You can see the vehicles are still driving through there. It's just such a mess. And here's a stuck truck. Someone was actually got stuck in March 2006. I don't even know if they were issued a citation. A drive-by shot, 2007. And, you know, this is just like this week. There are still people entering this area and driving around in this wetland, and you can see the spray of dirt that they flung up. And I'm really offended. I mean, I drive past here every day, and it shouldn't be that hard to put up a simple little post and chain or something, you know, a cable to keep people out. Here's the curb where they're currently driving over. And that's it. And so all I want to do is just ask you to direct your staff to try to work with Santa Barbara County, the 2nd District, and to try to pursue a simple and inexpensive solution to this problem. Surely there's got to be something we can do to stop this ongoing damage. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mr. Seacole.
I've I see the last speaker speaking with the supervisor and the assistant CEO with respect to the county and the county's issue here. And do you have you presented this to the county? Have you been told that they won't help you? Or oh, you're doing it now, right as we speak.
Well, and I should say that back when Susan Rose was still in office, we had lots of dialogue via Rachel Couch, and we went out and did lots of site visits, but that was back in the fall of 2006. And the rocks were put in place earlier in 2006, but obviously they weren't placed quite in the right place.
Are you speaking about rocks on the to save the Goleta Beach Park,
actually,
or are you talking about the people spinning Brodies down in the wetland?
I'm talking about the Brodies in the wetland, but coincidentally they were rocks taken from Goleta Beach and put conveniently in this area, but unfortunately they were dumped in kind of a pile. They weren't spread out enough to prevent the access.
Okay.
There's still a curb. You know, there's people will drive down, you know, a certain degree to get in the wetland, but I don't think the whole place has to be fenced off.
Well, and the county has a responsibility to protect this wetland, and I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to be all over it.
And I just want to say, to be totally fair, I have recently talked to county staff. They do, I mean, this just kind of got dropped for a while. I believe there was an issue with commission requesting a wetlands delineation to put in a fence. But as you can see, I mean, there's like a nice bank right next to the roadway that some sort of...
Okay, thank you. I'd be remiss if I didn't, on behalf of the commission, want to thank the staff. We're very lucky, and they work very long hours, and this week and every week, and in these uncharted times. We got good news on our budget yesterday, and thank those commissioners and everyone, and especially staff that have been working on this for a long time. But we really owe a great deal of respect for the staff and their commitment in these uncharted times on these budget constraints, and how they hang in there and continue to do it each and every day, and with all the changes and with the limited resources and people, etc. I'm amazed. And so behalf of all the commissioners, we appreciate it, Mr. Douglas, and your staff, and I wish you'd tell each and every one of them.
You can be sure, Mr. Chairman, I will do that.
Thank
and
you.
There, many of them are probably watching. No, they're not. They're working on other things.
Yeah.
I know that most of us say ditto to that.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Commissioner Kajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Douglas, an observation. How is it that we're allow vehicular access on an Oceano Dunes nearby snowy plover nesting area, and we're able to manage it with the help of the state parks in Lompoc? My understanding, they're asking for pedestrian access, and that's not being allowed.
Well, there's a plan that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service put together with the Air Force. We did review the closure for purposes of snowy plover protection, and I don't remember the details of it, but there are different issues raised in different locations. Here there are no vehicles, as I understand it. It's pedestrian access.
Make it safer.
Well, it's not. I just don't know the history of it. But at Oceana Dunes, because there are vehicles there, obviously vehicles have to be dealt with. But so do pedestrians and people with pets. So those are all issues that have to be addressed, and you have to craft it to the particular location. I just don't know the specifics here relative to the history of vehicles, for example.
With the pets, if they're on leash, they're less of a danger than otherwise. But my bringing it back up, if there is a way that we can visit the issue through whatever staff you have available to see if we can serve some of their needs and give them access.
Well, we're certainly looking at the access issue relative to the road that was washed out, and access consistent with the protection of the plover, and we've told the Air Force that. And that may be coming back here, unless they reach agreement with the county to address that issue, in which case we'd be happy with that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Wan,
One comment, Commissioner Okajian. The situation between Vandenberg and Oceana Dunes is quite different to a large extent because of our jurisdiction and our authority and our ability to deal with it. Okay, so that's another major factor for you to understand the difference.
I understand that, but so it's
Oh, you're asking for it now.
Thank you very much, and see everybody in, I think it's L.A. next month. Have a good trip. Thank you for the public.